Hello and welcome to Mysteries of Science. My name's Dan and I'm the editor of Science and Nature, the monthly magazine from the team behind The Week Junior.
And I'm Michael, the junior editor. On this podcast, we take a look at our favourite mysteries of science. These are the strange phenomena and bizarre beasts that have left scientists scratching their heads and, despite their best efforts, remain well and truly unsolved.
Speaking of bizarre beasts, Michael, I've always been fascinated by those fantasy creatures that morph and change their shape and their size and their appearance. I'm thinking werewolves, vampires, you know, the Incredible Hulk. But I've always wondered, is this actually possible? Could it be real? And if it could be real, how does it happen?
Yes, shape-shifting. It's something that's captured the human imagination for centuries. There's been many classic stories, as you said, about shape-shifting creatures, but also reports of real-life animals that can change their appearance.
Awesome, let's dive in. We've got some great expert guests here, and we're going to try and see through these disguises, figure out just how these creatures do it, and whether or not we humans might be able to shape-shift one day. This is Mysteries of Science.
So, Dan, this is a massive topic. Where do we start?
Let's start by talking to a really good friend of Science and Nature, somebody who writes loads of articles for us. Why don't you introduce yourself, Ben?
Hi, I'm Ben Hoare, a writer and editor. I've always been interested in natural history ever since I was a kid. Nowadays, I mostly write books for children. My new one is about plants. I've written books about nature's treasures and all the amazing, curious animals that we share the world with. And I live in the middle of nowhere in Somerset.
Ben is a total animal expert. So, Ben, tell us, what's your favourite shapeshifter?
Well, I mean, who doesn't love tadpoles? This is one of my earliest memories, actually, going with my mum and dad to look at some frog spawn that appeared. It's like magic when it appears in spring, isn't it? February, March, that sort of time. And you see this in a pond, and it's kind of a childhood rite of passage to take a small amount of the frog spawn, bring it home, put it in a tank, and watch that spawn develop into frogs. I mean, that's a miracle happening in front of your eyes.
Yes, tadpoles. This is an absolute classic. I remember studying them at school.
Yeah, we did it last summer, actually, me and the kids in the back garden. But unfortunately, the neighbours built a new pond this year, so all the frogs want to go in there rather than into my small plastic tub. Very disappointed this year.
It's their loss.
Just thought about that. It's their loss indeed, yeah. Just thought I'd like to share that with you, Michael. Anyway, yes, this process of tadpoles turning into frogs is an example of what scientists call metamorphosis, which is basically another word for shapeshifting.
Interesting. So tell us, Ben, what other shapeshifters are there?
So jellyfish. Jellyfish are mind-blowing. I mean, for a start, they're just the most amazingly beautiful creatures to watch. But jellyfish, the way they live their lives, they're so different from many other animals. So they're a pretty special kind of shapeshifter. So I could run through how they do it. I mean, they start off, what we think of as the jellyfish is just the adult form. We call the medusa. But they have these free-swimming larvae, which are tiny little creatures floating free in the ocean. After a while, they sort of settle down on the seabed, and they now start a totally different kind of life, a little bit like coral or sea anemones. They actually fix themselves to the seabed. And at this, they've got these little wavy arms like noodles almost, and we call them polyps when they're like that. So they're still larvae, and then after a while doing that, they change again and they become another kind of free swimming larvae floating around the ocean, and then finally they turn into an adult jellyfish. And you know, the jellyfish doesn't have a brain, doesn't have bones, doesn't have a heart. It's nearly all water. And they're just, they blow my mind anyway, jellyfish. So yeah, that would be one of my favourite shape-shifting animals.
How incredible is that? I didn't know all of that. That's incredible. Little wavy arms like noodles. Amazing.
Yes, sea creatures seem to be particularly good shapeshifters. In fact, our next guest, Ali Sparks, describes the cuttlefish, which is another sea creature, as shape-shifting royalty.
Hi, I'm Ali Sparks, and I'm the author of the Shapeshifter series. One of the most amazing shapeshifters in nature, I think, is the cuttlefish. Although technically it doesn't change its shape, but it has the most amazing ability to change its surface, the colour of it. And we know about chameleons. We know that chameleons obviously can change their skin pigmentation to camouflage themselves among leaves and foliage. But it tends to be a fairly slow process. If you watch a cuttlefish, particularly during the mating season, genuinely see if you can dig up some footage online somewhere and watch these fish. They are amazing. They're similar to look at to an octopus, but not quite so leggy. And you can actually watch the colours flickering over them. It looks like computer graphic animation, but it's not, it's for real. And so they can just instantly change colour to match the seabed or the seaweed around them, or simply put on this incredible show of rainbow colours shimmering across them to attract a mate. So for me, that in the real world, not the mythological or pretend world that I inhabit, but the real world, the cuttlefish is the shape-shifting king.
All hail the cuttlefish, the shape-shifting king.
Bow down to the cuttlefish. And Ali isn't kidding when she says how incredible it looks. If you and a grown-up look it up online, cuttlefish changing colours on YouTube, then you'll be in for quite the light show.
Right, so we've heard about these incredible real-life shapeshifters, but there are also, as we talked about earlier, some incredible imaginary shapeshifters as well. Or at least we think they're imaginary, huh? Perhaps they're more real than we think.
Yes, there have been many stories throughout history of shapeshifting creatures, including Ali's books, The Shapeshifter Series.
Yeah, Ali, could you tell us more about your books? What are they about?
Well, Dax Jones is a kid whose life is not awful. He's not being forced to work down the mines. He's not in the workhouse. He's just living with his stepmum and his half-sister. The problem is his stepmum doesn't really get him, doesn't really like him, to be honest, and somewhat resents him. I don't want to alienate any stepmums out there, because I know loads of them are really good friends and family are as well, but this particular one doesn't get him, so he's not having a great life. And he needs escape, really. His dad works away on the oil rigs, he never sees his dad. And then one day he has an argument with his stepmom. She shuts him out in the back garden to do some gardening while she and her daughter go off to the local shopping centre, and says, just do some weeding and I'll speak to you when I get back, and locks him out of the house. And he ends up getting trapped in the shed because there's a dodgy catch on the door and he can't get out, and it's a very hot day and he's very panicky. And then he sort of passes out, and when he wakes up, he's a fox. That's where it all begins.
Wow, waking up as a fox, that's not something that happens every day, right? So where did Ali get her ideas from?
Well, it was partly inspired by her own experiences running around in the wild when she was growing up. Although, I should add, not the bit about turning into a fox.
I was quite lucky because computer games were coming in my early teens. So up until probably about 13 or 14, there wasn't actually much else to do, which meant we had to go out and play. And we couldn't phone each other unless we were willing to have our dad standing over us with a timer saying, that's 1 minute now, you can't afford anymore. So we didn't have any other way of communicating other than just being with each other. So that meant going out, running around, spending a lot of time in the woods and things. And so there's sort of the wildlife of the woods sort of kind of seeped into me, I think. The smell of the woods, the sense of freedom and adventure. So when I wanted to write a story about someone whose life changes beyond all measure, shapeshifts, I thought, wouldn't it be brilliant if you could just sort of suddenly turn into something which could look after itself in the wild? And I thought of the fox. And so that's where the shapeshift came from, and that's where it had to go. It had to be able to go to the woods.
So how do these stories of shapeshifters overlap with the real thing? I wonder how much they're based on reality as well. Ali, what sort of research did you do into shapeshifters while you were writing the book?
I did. I mean, I'm a journalist as well by training, and I love to do the research. So I did a lot of foxes, and I met a fox, a sort of semi-tame fox, which I got photographed with for my author photo in the back of the first edition of the Shapeshifter books. And I know Chris Packham, we actually went to the same school, so I asked him to give me some information on what foxes are like, and he left a very entertaining monologue on my answer phone about the way foxes behave and what they want in life. And I also did a research on the all the various cultures that have shapeshifters in them, and there are many and varied kinds of shapeshifter in sort of culture and myth. The one that springs to mind is the Native American, the Navajo, who apparently believe in a thing called a skinwalker, and that's something which, and it's a little bit zombie-ish, I think. It's not generally seen as a very good thing, but if somebody comes back as a skinwalker, they can take on the skin and the appearance of somebody else, and that's quite a sinister one. And in fact, that is referenced in Finding the Fox fairly early on. But Dax Jones is nothing like that. I mean, Dax Jones is shape-shifting, to be honest, is much more like Incredible Hulk.
OMG. The skinwalker sounds absolutely terrifying.
Yes, I think that's one shapeshifter we definitely want to avoid.
Well, I guess it goes to show how many stories there are about shapeshifting across like loads of different cultures.
Yeah, and as Ali pointed out, one of the biggest, literally one of the biggest superheroes of all time, the Incredible Hulk, is a shapeshifting story.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice her talking about the Incredible Hulk, because I know that you're a massive Marvel fan, Michael. So I wonder, how is Dax Jones's shapeshifting like the Incredible Hulk?
Well, here's where you have to think about the practical side of shapeshifting, and specifically, what would happen to your clothes?
So, of course, Incredible Hulk has the same problem. Every time Dr. Bruce Banner shifts into the Incredible Hulk, he splits his shirt off, everything goes pinging around, except, significantly, his trousers, which only ever fray around the calves, which is probably a good thing. But he has to have this problem of what he's going to do about his clothes, and he has to sort of creep around when he goes back to his ordinary man form. And I remember in the TV series in the 70s, Dr. Banner used to go and nick things. Well, he didn't. He used to take things off washing lines and then put dollar bills under the pegs to pay for them and creep away wearing somebody else's clothes. And I thought, I don't need this in this series of books, because although there's quite a lot of comedy in my writing, the main thrust of the story is action adventure, and it could really slow things down if Dax is continually having to deal with the problem of where his shoes have gone and where he's left his shirt and his pants. And so I created what I'd like to call the shape-shifting energy field, which means that everything that Dax Jones is and everything he perceives of himself shifts. So if he's wearing clothes and he knows that he's wearing clothes, and we all have an awareness of how we are walking around in the world and what we're looking like and the image that we're giving off to people, what we're carrying, even the bag that we have over our shoulder, everything within that sort of awareness field just flips out and flips into the new shape. So the fox becomes the fox. The fox is not carrying a satchel. The satchel has just assimilated into the fox.
Now, the shape-shifting energy field, that's absolute genius. And a great solution to a problem that I don't think I'd given much thought to before.
Yeah, hopefully if humans are ever able to shapeshift one day, then we'll have this shapeshifting energy field.
Now, that's the question. We've heard all about these shapeshifting animals, but what about us? What about humans? We're getting to the nub of it now. Could we ever shapeshift like Dax Jones does in the stories?
Well, I think to understand whether we could ever shapeshift, first of all, we need to understand how animals shapeshift.
Oh, fair enough then. Okay, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but, well, how do they do it? We've heard about tadpoles turning into frogs, right? And jellyfish with their multi sort of stage life. Cuttlefish, chameleons. How does it happen? What's the science behind shapeshifting?
I mean, the short answer is there are plenty of scientists looking at this, and we still don't know how every little aspect of it works. But certainly in some, so take insects, for example, hormones control how and when metamorphosis, another word for shape-shifting, hormones control how and when that happens. And there's this one particular hormone which keeps the larva in its juvenile and its young state. So let's say you've got a butterfly. So the larva is going to be a caterpillar. And so long as the caterpillar is producing these hormones that are telling it to, these chemicals, if you like, they're telling it to stay a caterpillar, it stays a caterpillar. But then at some point, the caterpillar decides, I'm not going to be a caterpillar anymore. It stops making that hormone. It becomes a pupa or a chrysalis. And inside there, it rebuilds itself and obviously emerges as an adult butterfly. So hormones is a big part of it, at least in insects. What's going on inside the pupa or the chrysalis while the caterpillar is turning into a butterfly? That's just, it's not a small change. It's completely rebuilding itself. You know, the caterpillar is basically an eating machine. You know, it's all about eating and growing fat, and it's very, very good at doing that. Caterpillars are brilliant at eating and getting fat, and that's basically all they do. But then the butterfly, you know, it's got a nervous system, it's got organs involved in breathing, it feeds in a different way, it breathes in a different way, it's got wings. So all of those systems have got to be created in that pupa and the chrysalis. So it's a major change that's going on.
Wow, so that's incredible. So in insects, at least, Dan, the answer is these chemicals in the body called hormones, which basically tell the animal when it's time to transform.
Yeah, so but why do they do this? What's the purpose of all this shape-shifting? I mean, they have to do it for a reason, right? Why go to all this trouble?
Well, I think, one of the big ones is if you can exist in two completely different ways, then you can live in different places and do different things. I mean, this is the beauty of shape-shifting, isn't it? If you can change your body and what you eat and what you do from one way of being into a completely different way of being, then you can live in different places and do different things. So the caterpillar might eat leaves, and the adult butterfly, well, that sips sugary nectar from flowers and flies. The caterpillar walks around, and they can be in different habitats. So we talked about the jellyfish. So jellyfish larvae are floating around in the ocean, taking tiny particles of food, or they're settling on the bottom and catching food that way. Whereas the jellyfish, it's much larger, it's got its stinging arms, and it's feeding in yet another way. And it enables, amphibians is a brilliant example. Frogs, of course, because the tadpoles are existing in water, and then the adult is often largely on land, not always. So it evolved a long time ago in some of these groups of animals as a way of exploiting different habitats. Scientists actually, a couple of years ago, about 2019, two, 3 years ago, they found the oldest ever caterpillar. It's 44 million years old, preserved in a lump of amber, which is that kind of a lump of fossil tree resin. And obviously insects have been around longer than that, but it shows you how long animals have been doing this. It's not new. Shape-shifting has evolved over many, many millions of years.
So we've arrived, haven't we, Michael? We're there. This is the point. You know what I want to ask now, don't you? Could I ever shapeshift?
Well, that's a big question, isn't it? Because cultures all over the world, you know, have stories about people that can metamorphose and change from one thing into another. If you think about the legend of werewolves, that's a classic example, which obviously been used in the Harry Potter films and movies, but it's much older than that. The werewolf legend is quite an old one, and lots of different cultures have legends like that. And the ancient Greeks wrote these epic poems about people who were changed into all kinds of animals, or were hurt half animal and half person. And there's some famous books about people that have turned into insects. I think one way to answer your question is if you think about modern humans, which I am, you are, we all are, we've only really been on Earth for 300,000 years. And some of these other animals that are the expert shapeshifters, like amphibians, well, they've been here at least 300 million years. Jellyfish, 650 million years. So, who knows? We haven't been on Earth very long yet. I think it's pretty unlikely, but well, who knows? We've only been here 300,000 years. That's not very long compared to some of these other animals.
Oh, so you're telling me that there is a chance, you know, given a few more million years, maybe.
Yeah, we might get there, but it might just take us a very, very long time.
So, but say it was possible, though. Say we could do it. Say humans could shapeshift. I wonder what animals our guests would shapeshift into.
I've been asked that a few times. Fox is my favourite creature in the world, but I don't think I could resist the chance to be a peregrine falcon, which is what Dax turns into, because it is the fastest bird on the planet. And who wouldn't want to see what the world looked like from, you know, 500 metres up, and the speed at which they go as well? It would be incredible.
Well, you know, who wouldn't want to fly? You know, where I am today, you know, we've got swallows swooping around our house in Somerset, and it's a big question whether birds or other animals can actually, the extent to which they have emotions and feelings and whether they're actually enjoying what they're doing. But just looking at them, it must be awesome to be able to fly. So I think being a bird like a swallow would be pretty awesome, actually.
So it looks like our experts would really like to fly. That's where they're going with this. What about you, Michael? What animal would you like to shapeshift to?
We did a big feature on cheetahs in a recent issue of Science and Nature magazine, and I think it'd be quite fun to, particularly if you're about to race someone, to just shapeshift into a cheetah and then, you know, run as fast as you can. How about
nice,
you, Dan?
Yeah, we've got some fantastic animals which we have talked about. I've been editing articles on these amazing animals in this new issue of Science and Nature, which is actually on sale this weekend. So there's red kites, but as you said, flying's been ticked off. So maybe I'd go for an Australian animal like a wombat, which is famous for its cube-shaped poos. But what about you, our listeners? What animal or creature would you like to shapeshift into if you could? We'd love to hear your thoughts. We've got a funky new system that we've just set up where you can leave us a voicemail message. It's super simple. All you need to do is to go to funkidslive.com/mysteries and press the big red button and record your message.
Don't forget, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time for our next episode, the last one in this series.
Goodness me, the final one of the series. Where did the time go? I can hardly believe that series 3 is coming to an end. We'll be answering your mysteries in this episode. These are the burning scientific questions that you want the answers to.
Yes, this is your chance to use our shiny new system. So hurry over to funkidslive.com/mysteries and leave us a voicemail message. Until then,
stay curious.
Thanks for listening to The Week Junior Show, which is made by the same people that make The Week Junior magazine. You can get a free trial of The Week Junior by heading to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast and using the code PODCAST at checkout.